Thanks for listening to the Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
There was so much feedback on my top seven. I said, you know what? I think I got a top 20. And so here we go quickly. Roger Federer, 20. Kobe Bryant, 19. Barry Sanders, 18. Barry Bonds, 17. Bo Jackson, 16. Serena Williams, 15. Wayne Gretzky, 14. Johnny Manziel, 13. Usain Bolt, 12. Ronda Rousey, 11. Brett Favre, LeBron James, Magic and Larry Bird tied at 8. Maguire, Sosa tied at 7. Tim Tebow, 6. Here we move into the top 5. Another two guys who are tied. Peyton Manning, Tom Brady. I feel like it's almost impossible in the same way that you can't say Maguire without Sosa, that you can't say Magic without Larry Bird. I think it's hard to talk about Peyton Manning without also talking about Tom Brady. And I know Peyton Manning's been retired for a couple of years, but I would imagine most of you feel the same way. I think you could make an argument that Peyton Manning, Tom Brady is the greatest rivalry in sports head-to-head with Magic Johnson and Larry Bird that maybe we have never seen. I think you could make Federer, Nadal. You could go back in time and end up with other guys. But to me, the way to test this is it possible to talk about Tom Brady without within a couple of sentences also talking about Peyton Manning? And vice versa, is it possible to talk about Peyton Manning without within a couple of sentences talking about Tom Brady? I think the answer is no. Both of these guys, if you were a Manning guy or if you were a Brady guy, you didn't just watch your guy, you watched the other guy so you could argue your guy was better. They defined the NFL for about 15 years. The most successful and dominant 15-year stretch in the history of the NFL, nearly 20-year stretch, was helmed up by Peyton Manning and Tom Brady. I think when you go back and they write books, they are going to say the golden age of the NFL, the faces of the NFL at that time for basically nearly a 20-year period were Peyton Manning and they were Tom Brady. I've got them at 5. 4 is a guy that I think I missed on my initial list. 4 is a guy that I'll acknowledge I missed on my initial list, and then you guys blew me up on Twitter. You were making arguments. I took a step back, and I said, you know what? You're right about this guy, Michael Phelps. Michael Phelps, nobody even cares about swimming. In 2008, 2008, 2012, 2016 in Beijing, in London, and then again in 2016 in Rio or Brazil or wherever they were doing the races. Everybody made the decision, I've got to be there sitting down in front of my television to watch Michael Phelps in whatever medley he was in whatever relay he was in. I don't even know how many gold medals and medals overall that Michael Phelps has now, but there's never been an Olympic athlete who has gotten as many people to put the television on. I mean, people would set their DVRs when he was in Beijing and make sure, same thing in London, that they didn't even know what was going to happen in 2008 and 2012 and stay up late at night to watch it live in replay so that they could experience the joy of knowing what Michael Phelps was capable of. I hope Phelps is going to come back in 2020. I hope he's going to come back and do a couple more races in 2020 and just see if he can win another couple of medals. I would love to see it. Michael Phelps, number 4 on my list. Number 3, if you are a fan of boxing, I hope you are old enough to have experienced Mike Tyson when he was the baddest ass man on the planet. Some of you out there are like, where's Floyd Mayweather? Where's Conor McGregor? None of those guys ever in the history of boxing has compared to Mike Tyson as a needle mover back in the day. Mike Tyson would put on those black leather shorts and he would walk into the ring with just a white towel with a hole cut in it, and you had no idea what might happen. I mean, you think if you're my age, that Mike Tyson video game, Mike Tyson was an icon. I mean, you could not escape Tyson and everything surrounding him. He was a circus. Nowadays, a lot of you might know him from the Hangover movies. He's kind of become this lovable, kind of jokester in his later years. This dude was a trained assassin in the 80s and the early 90s. He went to prison, which would have been, can you imagine in a modern social media age? I mean, this dude went to prison for rape. It was an unbelievable story. Mike Tyson, he's number three on my list. Number two, the guy who set off this list, Tiger Woods. The reason why I thought about this at all was sitting watching the PGA Championship. Tiger Woods, I believe, number two all-time needle mover. And number one, 1980s, 90s, 2000s, 2010s, the number one needle mover in the OutKick history of sports needle movers, Michael Jordan. These are my 20. You can react to them. Michael Jordan, here's a couple of stats for you. Jordan in 1998, 35-plus million people watched Game 6 of the Chicago Bulls against the Utah Jazz. A few years later, without Michael Jordan in the NBA Finals, 8 million people watched the NBA Finals between the San Antonio Spurs and the New Jersey Nets. You just heard that. I want you to think about that for a minute. 8 million people watch Spurs and Nets. 35 million watch Bulls Jazz. We've never seen a drop-off like that in the history of sports. Michael Jordan's audience is still unrivaled. People want to talk about LeBron. LeBron doesn't hold a candle to the interest that Michael Jordan brought to bear. Here's a great stat for you. LeBron game 7 against the Warriors. Kobe game 7 against the Celtics. Both of those games, millions and millions of fewer viewers than Jordan in 98. Going up against the Jazz, and that's despite, this is an amazing stat, despite the fact that there are 50 million more people living in America now than were living in America in 1998 when Jordan played. The share of the audience that Michael Jordan brought to bear in the NBA has never been seen before, and I legitimately doubt whether it will ever be seen again. Michael Jordan, all-time number one on this list, needle movers. 877-996-6369. I will take your calls. Who should I go to? Let me go to the crew first.
Yeah,
and we'll
I was going to say top of the hour.
Top of the hour, 877-996-6369. That's my 20. Thoughts from you guys, Danny G.
Well, I'll give credit to the two listeners who tweeted both of these in. Yesterday, Chris tweeted Michael Vick. And that was also a name that I had written down while you were doing the top 20. Jonathan tweeted the show yesterday, and he wrote, hashtag redneck superhero. You know where he's going with this?
Probably Dale Earnhardt.
Yeah, Dale Earnhardt. He says, number three changed the sport. They went from 30,000-seat venues to 100,000-seat sellouts because of number three.
Yeah, I'm not enough of a NASCAR expert. I'm going to be honest with you. Several people told me Earnhardt should be on the list as a needle mover. NASCAR's in such a rough spot right now, it's hard for me to kind of give anybody that many props, but I think Earnhardt is a decent one. What about you guys, Eddie Garcia, Roberto, anybody else that you think should be on the list?
No, I just would have switched Bo Jackson with Manziel on your list.
Yeah, I think you could make an argument. There's some people who are already weighing in, fired up that I don't have Bo Jackson high enough on this list. And that's one of the good things about the list. I mean, I think this is one that I'm going to keep, like I said, I'm going to put it off to the side, and I'm going to continue to kind of adjust it as more and other games and things evolve. I think you can make an argument I was too low on Bo Jackson. I mean, look, that's the thing about a list, right? It's never flawlessly done. I'll also write this out and put it up on OutKick so you can Google it and go see it for yourselves and kind of look at it. Eddie Garcia, anybody that you think should have been on this list that wasn't?
I can't think of any names that you have excluded. I also, like Roberto, wouldn't have had Johnny Manziel, I don't think, that high. But as a hockey fan, I was warmed to hear that Wayne Gretzky is at least on the list. So I was glad to hear that.
Johnny Manziel is, I mean, I think you could flip Johnny Manziel and Bo Jackson. I mean, I think that part of it is the age. Like, as we move into this modern age, I feel like it's much more common for you to get on Twitter or Facebook and actually be told, hey, this is going on, and you flip over and you watch it. And that's kind of the way that Johnny Manziel was. Johnny Manziel and Tebow, to me, are two sides of the same coin. The three best and most entertaining SEC football players that I have ever seen at quarterback, Cam Newton, Tim Tebow, and Johnny Manziel, all kind of happened bang, bang, bang in the same era of SEC dominance.
Be sure to catch live editions of OutKick, the coverage with Clay Travis, weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
We bring in Dan Wetzel now. I'm confident he's going to be good. Dan, we were just running through at the first hour of the show the best needle movers in sports. And you're around my age, so this was basically the 1980s, the 90s, the 2000s, and the 2010s. And I'm putting you on the spot a little bit, so I'll give you, like, my top five. And then I'm curious if there's other guys that you remember as a sports fan where you were like, oh, I got to see this guy. Like, I'm willing to drop whatever I'm doing to put on my television to watch. My top five in order: Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods, Mike Tyson, Michael Phelps, and then I tied Peyton Manning and Tom Brady together because I kind of see them as inextricably intertwined when it comes to that era of the NFL. Are there guys that for you, you jump out and you're like, oh, I had to watch this guy when he was playing? Like, he's the guy who my buddy texts me, or even before the text would exist, somebody would call you on the telephone, even old school phone, and you'd be like, oh, I can't miss this. Are there any athletes that you remember on your particular list?
Man, those are good. So it's any point of that time. I mean, so I really like Tyson. To me, is the one who, like, just captured America's by storm.
And there's a lot of people out there who will argue Conor McGregor, Floyd Mayweather, Lennox Lewis, all those guys. None of them hold a candle to Mike Tyson.
Now, Tyson was unbelievable, and it was like the fights were 45 seconds. They were showing it the other day on ESPN 2 or something. I was watching. They just showed, like, basically an hour special of all his early fights, and I can still remember some. They'd be in these, like, you know, they'd be in, like, Poughkeepsie, New York, like the Knights of Columbus Hall, and he'd come out and just maul somebody in 43 seconds, and that would be the end of that. And you couldn't miss it. You just literally couldn't miss it. No question, Phelps, I thought, that's a great call. I was always covering the Olympics, but, you know, I'd hear these reports like sports bars. You know, everybody going silent and going crazy in sports bars around the country for a swim.
Remember Phelps was a great one. That was one of some of my callers and listeners were suggesting him. I remember I was at a wedding in 2008. During Beijing, one of my good buddies was getting married, and it was Phelps was about, I don't even remember what race it was for Phelps, but everybody left the reception and went into this bar down the hall in the hotel that had on Michael Phelps to watch him swim. And I remember thinking, even back in 2008, like, you know, Michael Phelps has got a huge grip on the American population when everybody leaves an open bar and a wedding and a band to go down the hall to stand in a crowded bar and just watch a swimmer. Like, and his sport is not even popular. Like, at least boxing is really popular. You think about Tyson. Phelps made something that most people don't care about at all, swimming, into must see so you can talk about swimming, which is why I think he's got to be up there. And he's done it in 2008 now, 2012, 2016. I hope he comes back for 2020 and we get a swan song of some form or fashion.
That'd be awesome. The other one on that would be Usain Bolt.
Yeah, I've got him on the list. I've got Usain Bolt at 12 on my list.
Yeah, similar fashion. I covered Usain Bolt. Again, I wasn't watching the Olympics, but like I was in Rio, he had a first heat of the 100 at like 10 in the morning, and there were however big the stadium was.
Yeah.
Like 60,000, absolutely packed an hour before.
Yeah,
because
that's pretty
Usain
cool.
Bolt was going to run. If Usain Bolt in the first heat is not running, he's jogging. And and he comes out and just jogs and can beat everybody. But there were all of these people there just to watch him on the track. Not even really participate. It's like, I think Tiger's where you're bringing this up. You go to a professional golf tournament, and Tiger is on the practice green. Tiger is hitting balls, out of a bunker to practice. And there's, cameras held, everyone's holding their cell phone. Like,
yes.
There's 500 people around to watch the guy just sit there and swing, hit a bucket of balls. Like, he's not even doing anything. That is when you hit some level of just insanity. And so it's like, oh, my God, Usain Bolt's going to sort of half try. I got to be there. And I kind of felt Phelps was the ultimate, or Bolt was the ultimate globally, because this is a kind of funny story, but I was going to cover one of his races, and this was in Rio again, and I met this guy in the security line who was a sports writer from Pakistan, and so I don't know the biggest city in Pakistan, but he worked in that city, and he worked at the newspaper, and they are not really good at the Olympics at all. They don't have a ton of sports. They're more into cricket and things like that. And he said, Usain Bolt's the biggest thing in Pakistan, because he's just basically like, it's primal, right? The whole country, the whole world, everybody's done it. Let's race to the tree. Let's race to here. And here's this guy who's the best that anyone's ever seen. So I actually think globally I might go with that, because, golf and these other sports. But American, yeah. I put Serena Williams on that list. I don't know if I put her in the top five anymore.
Yeah, I've got Serena at 15 on my list.
15. She certainly climbed that bit where it's like, hey, Serena's going for another Grand Slam. And these last the last one at Wimbledon was really big. Obviously, she comes back from the pregnancy, and I think if she gets into another one, and can she tie, Margaret Court's old 24 major Grand Slams and things like that. But I think you got a pretty good list there. I'm certainly a combat sports fan. John Jones and a UFC fan and Anderson Silva were big, but those are much smaller segments of people watching than I don't think anybody ever got that excited about a Mayweather fight. They bought him. But, I don't know anyone was like, God, I got to watch Floyd Mayweather duck punches. I mean, the guy was brilliant, but it was because he couldn't get hit. You want to, it was like, I won't get hit for 12 rounds and I'll hit the other guy enough to win the decision. He was never that exciting of a fighter the way Anderson Silva or John Jones were, to see what happened. But I think he got Bolt too low. That'd be my only thing. And I like the Manning and Brady kind of together.
We're talking to Dan Wetzel. You can follow him on Twitter at Dan Wetzel, Yahoo Sports national columnist. You wrote a great column, and we talked about this a little bit. The Big Ten. Right now in the Big Ten East, if you run through the seven schools there, Michigan is the only school that hasn't had not just like a controversy, but a major, potentially almost criminal-related investigation into their athletics program. You got Maryland with DJ Durkin, who is on leave of absence right now. Got Ohio State with Urban Meyer. The Urban Meyer thing, maybe not that serious, which you have to say, compared to some of the Ohio State wrestling-related charges that are going on. Michigan State, you've covered the Larry Nassar situation. You live in Michigan, so you're familiar with that story better than most. You cover covered the Penn State story aggressively, everything surrounding Larry Sandusky. Rutgers has had a series of different scandals relating to their athletic department, and Indiana just fired Kevin Wilson for inappropriate treatment of players. That was the allegation anyway. Is this a Big Ten related issue, or is it just a coincidence? How do you kind of tally up all of these different awful to bad situations that have happened recently in that conference?
It's the mystery, and I've talked about this with a lot of people. I think it's just because you play in an athletic conference together, there just really isn't any shared. I mean, it's just a scheduling deal, right? Like, there's no particular difference between the NFC, the NFC South and the AFC North. I mean, they're all in it, so you're sort of there. And I understand it's kind of Midwest or something like that for the most part, but I just think it's a really bad stretch. And I think a lot of things have happened in the Big Ten. Now, I think there's a couple, Ohio State wrestling, Larry Nassar, in particular, that were very, those are just criminal. Larry Nassar is just a criminal, just a pedophile who was able to really exploit his position. He wasn't really part of the Michigan State Athletic Department. He was really just a doctor on the campus. But obviously, this is a terrible stretch for this conference. And I don't know what lessons there are for everybody else. So I certainly think any of this stuff could happen elsewhere. I kind of lean on this one bit that I just think these football programs have gotten so over the top in their self-importance. And I understand that they've always been self-important, but it feels like there just isn't the checks and balances or the oversight or just the openness of an organization at some of these colleges that there would be maybe there was in the past. And I think that's across the board. I think there's this idea that the coach is always right. And let's build this, $250 million football facility, and nobody can get in without a fingerprint. And, we basically keep the players away from the students. You can eat your meals here. You can play mini golf here. Everything is like football, football, football. And I'm not, practices are closed. What was it? Was it Georgia? I think it was Georgia that, like, remember they changed their Freedom of Information Act?
So yes. That,
like, we didn't know where the assistant coaches might be recruiting. Like, some of this stuff is just so over the top that I think it can build a culture or a mindset that, we're fighting a war here. And, what's the first casualty of war? The truth. And, these things are big. I mean, these scandals are big. We have players dying, and I know some of them aren't new, but this isn't, Michigan players are under investigation for selling their shoes. Like, okay, I don't care. And they can have that rule, but I just feel like we've gotten to this point where everything's untouchable or unknowable or everything, and maybe we're just have lost our marbles on that, and I think it leads to some of it, but I don't know. I don't know what you think.
It's interesting. I was thinking a lot about this of late. I read your column, and the only thesis I could come up with I think it's fair to say that the SEC and the Big Ten are, in the college sports universe, by far the two biggest brands, right? And they mirror each other. They're both middle parts of the country, the Midwest by and large, and the South. And I was trying to think, why has the Big Ten, which had this reputation for being such an academic powerhouse and having, let's be honest, what Jim Delaney sold for so long was the idea that the Big Ten got the balance right, that they were academic elite, but they were also athletically elite. And to have it happen in the Big Ten, one thing I was wondering, I was thinking about, like, for instance, Ole Miss and Mississippi State. and how those two schools have been going back and forth at each other so aggressively, and it's been so ugly and public. And Hugh Freeze got fired because they had a lawsuit, and they got the text messages and the phone call records and everything else. And I wonder on some level whether the hyper-competitive rivalries in the South have kept big, huge, ugly stories from happening, not because they're morally better, but just because if something really, really awful is happening at Alabama, people at Auburn find out about it and they publicize it and they use it against that school, right? I mean, in some way, yep, that the negativity of the rivalries and the intensity of the rivalries has kept really awful things from happening. Now, maybe it's just coincidence, and maybe that is it. But I wonder whether, you know, like everybody is so obsessed 365 days a year with Alabama-Auburn that every possible little pinprick of potential scandal gets poured over and examined. And moreover, you've got media. Mississippi's a great example where you basically have people doing investigations who are in favor or opposed to respective schools. And so as a result, you might be buying players, but I'm with you. I just really don't care about improper benefits. I said that in the earlier in this part of the show. We were talking about electric players, and somebody brought up Reggie Bush and how stupid it was that his Heisman Trophy got taken away because his family had a nicer beach house while he was playing at USC, like how dumb that was.
Right.
Is there any possibility there that that could be maybe one reason? Or, again, your answer could just be it's just random and it just has happened to happen all these places.
I mean, I think it's some of that. I'll put it this way. We hear yesterday, you know, Zach Smith was also arrested for
a DUI,
and nobody knew about it, hadn't made the media. I don't know that an assistant coach in a suburb of the town, it's not like he got arrested for a DUI in Montana on vacation in the summer.
Right.
And no one was checking, you know, and found Zach Smith. I mean, it's pretty, there's a lot of Zach Smiths, but in Dublin, Ohio, which is his hometown, and right, you know, very nice suburb right next to Columbus, that doesn't come out, you know, interesting. Does nobody, but I don't know that it isn't this, I think it's random, but I think we've gotten to this point where there's this sort of, I don't know, it just feels like if you're mistreating the players the way you have multiple allegations here. You have the Maryland case, like this is, you know, young man passes away. You have the Indiana case with the abuse. You have Illinois they eventually fired their head coach a couple years back because the school said he was discouraging players to get medical treatment. Right? Like, you know, did it take too long for that? Is there a mindset with these coaches that are just too far, where it's like we're trying to build the culture to win and we have to do everything? I mean, some of this stuff's just ridiculous. And it goes, kind of part of it, it just goes to the basic uncomfortable construct of college athletics. You would never invent this thing. Now, I love it, but you would never invent it. You have these players who are not professional athletes but are engaged in a professional activity, and a dangerous one. And they, you know, look, they get tuition, room, board. This isn't about, you know, pay. This argument isn't about paying, but they don't have much power. They don't have agents. They don't have a union like the NFL does. The amount of practices and the kind of practices you can do in college football is much tougher than you can do in the NFL. You can't just line guys up and do Oklahoma drills every single day in the NFL. You don't have full pads and stuff like that in the spring. These guys get time off and get more things because they're able to collectively bargain and say, hey, these are the rules that we need. Where in college football, you basically got to shut up because they'll just replace you in a second. No player has any power to really stand up. And so the only ones who do are disgruntled, quote unquote, or getting thrown off the program. Because if you're really good, you're trying to shut up and get to the league. And if you're not that good, you're trying to just keep your scholarship. So, it used to be that way in high school. It still can be in a lot of high school football, where the high school coach has all the power. I'm going to decide your thing. And if you go to other ways around the world that they train athletes, and even in other sports, you have a club system where you're able to move around. you know, if you're a soccer kid and or you're able to stand up, you basically have some kind of professional rights because you're part of a professional organization, and perhaps they don't treat you that same way. There's something wrong when I don't think anybody gets into college athletics and says, I want to abuse the players. I want to run guys so far they die. I'm sure these are tragic things for these guys. They're good people. But somewhere along the line, it just becomes too important where you actually think, I got to make this offensive lineman run 5 110-yard sprints, even though he needs his buddies to hold him up. And nobody on that field says, hey, stop. And he gets to 106-degree body temperature and goes into a coma for 2 weeks and dies. Like, something is wrong when otherwise good people are standing around watching this happen because they think Maryland football matters so much, or even that this drill will help us beat somebody. That's, we got to get one more win. That's where I think something's wrong with college athletics, and I think it's just a lack of oversight, or people even just, if everybody works inside the same building, they drive into the super secret facility and spend 18 hours a day there, it can make you think it does matter, and you can make you think it is important. And, you know, I don't know that that was the case in the past with college football when it was really more part of college. I hate these facilities they built because they're really about segregating the players away from the student body and keep the world away from the football facility. I just don't think it's a healthy environment. And I'm not saying it's A to B here, but I do think it plays a part in it.
Good stuff as always. Dan Wetzel, Yahoo Sports national columnist.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I'm just glad I was there.
Boys and girls.
I thought he thought I was like this ginormous piece of chicken.
Dying time's here.
I had a boa constrictor stuck to my face.
Sam, you have a what?
This is Animal Thunderdome.
I feel like the hippo is underrated on this segment because hippos kill 500 people a year, they say, in Africa right now. And this was a tough break. A tourist from Taiwan was taking pictures at a lake in Kenya on Sunday, and he was attacked and killed by a hippo just hours before a local fisherman was also mauled to death in the same area by another hippo. The uprising is real. Chang Ming Chuang and his friend Wu Peng Ti were at the edge of Lake Naivasha in Kenya's Rift Valley when a witness said they got too close to a hippo and were attacked. Chang was pronounced dead. I don't know how this happens. His friend was treated for minor bruising. I'm just going to toss this out there. If your buddy is dead and you got minor bruising, you didn't do much to try to save your buddy. They are not sure what led to the attack. But then later, just a little bit further down the same lake, a hippo, another different hippo, also killed someone. Don't mess with the hippos, people. They are deadly. What you got for me, Danny G?
All right,
you agree
Cliff.
With me?
Yeah,
if you get minor
real.
Bruising and
yeah.
your buddy dies, you probably didn't do very much to save his life.
Yeah, you weren't a good wingman when he was alive probably either.
No doubt.
That's horrible. Closer to home, Boulder, Colorado, a mountain lion became trapped inside a Colorado home, killed the family's house cat before police and wildlife officers were able to chase it out of the home. Boulder police say that the homeowner came back to the house last Thursday night. They found the mountain lion inside. It appears that the mountain lion pushed through a screen and he couldn't get back out of the home once he was in. The big cat roamed throughout two levels of this house for more than an hour before officers used non-lethal rounds to scare it out the front door and away from the neighborhood, which is just southwest of downtown Boulder. The Boulder Police Department tweeted a photo of the mountain lion inside next to the couch, along with a reminder to residents to keep ground-level doors and windows closed and locked. So imagine your cat, Fifi, Clay, and
yeah.
you come home, and your cat shredded to 100 pieces by a mountain lion.
Well, the cat's rough. You know, the other thing that would happen there is, like, somebody would have, like, a little poodle, and the poodle would think, oh, this is my house to protect. thinking, oh, the mountain lion's not going to go mountain lion on me, because I, you know, they don't know probably what one of those things is. But, yeah, that's probably tough to explain to the kids that the kitty cat got killed by the much bigger kitty cat.
And imagine the last few seconds of that poor cat's life on the run from a mountain lion. That, can you imagine? That would be,
it's a tough break. It's a tough break for a house cat to go that way. A house cat probably thinks, I'm set here. I'm going to have a 20-year life. Nothing really that dangerous. Going to kill some mice, hang out. Huh. Next thing you know, the house cat comes face-to-face with the mountain lion, and that expectation goes out the window in a hurry. I can't get over my guy, Wang Tu, or whatever his name was.
We want to hear you say the names again.
I think I might have just deleted that. But I got to be honest with you. If your buddy gets killed by a hippo and you just have some bruising, what does that mean? You're not even remotely there nearby while the hippo just goes to town and kills your buddy. This is like we had that issue where the guy got killed by the mountain lion, right? And then the guy left him behind. To me, if you're on a dangerous safari like this, first of all, do you think they were taking selfies? Because the number of people getting killed taking selfies these days is out of control. I bet they were trying to get the hippo in the background of their selfie, and the hippo was just like, I don't want to take a picture today, and I'm going to kill you. And this is just a lesson. Animals are wild. That's why wild animals, why the adjective is in front of the animal. Don't try to get too close to them. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm terrified to go on these safaris because everybody ends up dying.